suspicious, and pointed it out to the investigators. The woman simply was not showing typical signs of distress. In fact, I have investigated other rape cases in which women will cover their suprasternal notch while recounting the crime even decades after it occurred. Upon further investigation, the impassive woman's case fell apart. In the end, we learned she had fabricated all her allegations, costing the city thousands of dollars, merely because she thrived on the attention given to her by responding officers, investigating detectives, and victim advocates, all of whom initially believed her and wanted to help. Microexpressions of the hands. A micro gesture is a very brief nonverbal behavior that occurs when a person is attempting to suppress a normal response to a negative stimulus. In these circumstances, the more reflexive and short-lived the behavior is, the more truthful it tends to be. For instance, let's imagine the boss tells an employee he has to help out and work this weekend because someone is sick. On hearing the news, the employee's nose crinkles, or a slight smirk appears suddenly, but briefly. These micro gestures of dislike are very accurate displays of how the person truly feels. Similarly, our hands can display micro expressions that may surprise you. The bird as a word. In his remarkable book, Telling Lies, Dr. Paul Ekman describes his research using high-speed cameras to reveal microgestures that subconsciously communicate an individual's disfavor or true emotions. One such microgesture noted by Dr. Ekman is giving the bird. In a major national security case in which I was personally involved as an observer, a subject repeatedly used his middle bird finger to push his glasses into position whenever the lead Justice Department interviewer, whom he despised, asked him questions. This behavior was not observed with other interviewers, but only with the interviewer the subject plainly did not like. At first, we did not believe we were seeing such an obvious but fleeting gesture that was so clearly limited to a single interviewer. Fortunately, the interviews were videotaped as part of a legal proffer, that is, the subject agrees to cooperate in consideration for a lighter sentence, so we could review the tape to confirm what we were seeing. Perhaps equally interesting, the chief interviewer never saw the bird behavior, and when told about it, refused to accept that it was indicative of the interviewee's antipathy. When it was all over, however, the interviewee commented harshly on how much he despised the chief interviewer, and it was quite evident that he tried to subvert the interview because of this clash of personalities. Microgestures of the hands come in many forms, including pushing the hands downward along the legs and then lifting the bird finger at the moment the palms reach the knees. This has been observed in both men and women. Again, these microgestures occur very quickly and can be obscured easily by other activities. Watch for these behaviors and do not dismiss them if observed. At a minimum, microgestures should be examined in context as indicators of enmity, dislike, contempt, or disdain. Changes in hand behaviors can reveal important information. As with all nonverbal behaviors, sudden alterations in hand motion suggest an abrupt change in someone's thoughts and feelings. When lovers rapidly move their hands away from each other during a meal, it is a sign that something negative has just happened. Hand withdrawal may happen in seconds, but it is a very accurate real-time indicator of the person's feelings. Gradual hand withdrawals are also worthy of note. A while ago, I was invited to dinner by a married couple with whom I had been friends since our college days. We were chatting around the table at the end of the meal when the topic of finances arose. My friends revealed that they were experiencing money problems. As the wife complained about how the money just seemed to disappear, likewise, her husband's hands simultaneously and gradually disappeared from the tabletop. As she spoke, I watched him slowly withdraw his hands until they rested finally on his lap. This sort of distancing is a cue indicative of psychological flight, part of our limbic survival mechanism that often occurs when we are threatened. The behavior suggested to me that the husband was concealing something. As it turned out, he had been pilfering money from the couple's joint checking account to support a gambling habit, a vice that eventually cost him his marriage. His guilty knowledge of the covert withdrawals explained the reason his hands withdrew from the table. Although the motion was a gradual change, it was sufficient to cause me to suspect that something was wrong. One of the most important observations you can make in relation to the hands is noticing when they go dormant. When the hands stop illustrating and emphasizing, it is usually a clue to a change in brain activity, perhaps because of a lack of commitment, and is cause for heightened awareness and assessment. Although, as we've noted, hand restriction can signal deception, do not immediately jump to this conclusion. The only inference you can draw at the moment the hands go dormant is that the brain is communicating a different sentiment or thought. The change may simply reflect less confidence or less attachment to what is being said for a variety of reasons. Remember, any deviation from normal hand behavior, be it an increase, a decrease, or just something unusual, should be considered for its significance. Some concluding remarks about nonverbals of the hands and fingers. Most of us spend so much time studying people's faces that we underutilize the information provided by their hands. The sensitive hands of humans not only feel and sense the world around us, they also reflect our responses to that world. We sit in front of a banker, wondering if our loan will be approved, with our hands in front of us, fingers intertwined, prayer-like, reflecting the tension and nervousness within us. Or in a business meeting, the hands may assume a steepling position, letting others know we are confident. Our hands may quiver at the mention of someone who betrayed us in our past. Hands and fingers can provide a great deal of significant information. We just need to observe and decode their actions correctly and in context. You can know how someone feels about you from a single touch. The hands are powerful transmitters of our emotional state. Use them in your own nonverbal communications and count on them to provide valuable nonverbal intelligence about others. 7. The mind's canvas. Nonverbals of the face. When it comes to emotions, our faces are the mind's canvas. What we feel is exquisitely communicated through a smile, a frown, or immeasurable nuances in between. This is an evolutionary blessing that sets us apart from all other species and makes us the most expressive animals on this planet. Our facial expressions, more than anything else, serve as our universal language, our human cross-cultural lingua franca, whether here, wherever here is for you, or in Borneo. This international language has served as a practical means of communication since the dawn of man, to facilitate understanding among people lacking a common language. When observing others, we can quickly recognize when someone appears surprised, interested, bored, fatigued, anxious, or frustrated. We can look at our friends' faces and see when they are displeased, doubtful, contented, anguished, disappointed, incredulous, or concerned. The expressions of children let us know if they are sad, excited, perplexed, or nervous. We were never specifically taught how to generate or translate these facial behaviors, and yet we all know them, perform them, interpret them, and communicate through them. With all the various muscles that precisely control the mouth, lips, eyes, nose, forehead, and jaw, human faces are richly endowed to produce an immense variety of expressions. It is estimated that humans are capable of more than 10,000 different facial expressions. This versatility makes nonverbals of the face very effective, extremely efficient, and, when not interfered with, quite honest. Happiness, sadness, anger, fear, surprise, disgust, joy, rage, shame, anguish, and interest are universally recognized facial expressions. Discomfort, whether on the face of a baby, a child, a teenager, an adult, or the elderly, is recognized around the globe. Likewise, we can distinguish the expressions that let us know all is well. While our faces can be very honest in displaying how we feel, they do not always necessarily represent our true sentiments. This is because we can, to a degree, control our facial expressions and, thus, put on a false front. From an early age, we are taught by our parents not to make faces when we don't like the food in front of us, or we are compelled to fake a smile when greeting someone we don't like. In essence, we are taught to lie with our faces, and so we become quite adept at hiding our true sentiments facially, even though they occasionally do leak out. When we lie using our faces, we are often said to be acting. Obviously, world-class actors can adopt any number of faces to create fictional feelings on demand. Unfortunately, many people, especially con men and other more serious social predators, can do the same thing. They can put on a false face when they are lying, conniving, or trying to influence the perception of others through false smiles, fake tears, or deceiving looks. Facial expressions can still provide meaningful insights into what a person is thinking and feeling. We simply have to be mindful that these signals can be faked. So the best evidence of true sentiment is derived from clusters of behaviors, including facial and body cues, that buttress or complement each other. By assessing facial behaviors in context and comparing them to other nonverbal behaviors, we can use them to help reveal what the brain is processing, feeling, and or intending. Since the brain tends to use everything above the shoulders as a single canvas for expression and communication, we are going to refer to the face and its mantle, the neck, as one, our public face. Negative and positive emotional displays of the face. Negative emotions, displeasure, disgust, antipathy, fear, and anger make us tense. That tension manifests in many ways in and on the body. Our faces may show a constellation of tension-revealing cues simultaneously. Tightening of jaw muscles, flaring of nose wings, narrow wing dilation, squinting of the eyes, quivering of the mouth, or lip occlusion, in which lips seemingly disappear. On closer examination, you might note that eye focus is fixed, the neck is stiff, and head tilt is non-existent. An individual might not say anything about being tense, but if these manifestations are present, there is no doubt that he is upset and that his brain is processing some negative emotional issue. These negative emotional cues are displayed similarly throughout the world, and there is real value in looking for them. When someone is upset, either all or only a few of these nonverbal behaviors may be present, and they may manifest as mild and fleeting, or may be acute and pronounced, lasting for minutes or even longer. Think of Clint Eastwood in the old spaghetti westerns, squinting at his opponents before a gun battle. That look, shown in figure 59 of the PDF, said it all. Of course, actors are trained to make their facial expressions particularly easy to recognize. However, in the real world, these nonverbal cues are sometimes more difficult to spot, either because they are subtle, intentionally obfuscated, or simply overlooked. Consider, for example, jaw tightening as an indication of tension. After a business meeting, an executive might say to a colleague, "Did you see how tense Bill's jaw got when I made that proposal?" Only to hear his partner respond, "No, I didn't catch that." We miss facial cues because we have been taught not to stare, and/or because we concentrate more on what is being said than on how it is being said. My lips say I love you, but my looks say otherwise. I am amazed at how many times positive words pour from people's mouths, while their faces give off negative nonverbals that clearly contradict what is being said. At a recent party, one of the guests was commenting how pleased he was that his kids had good jobs. He said this with a less-than-generous smile and tight jaw muscles, as those standing around congratulated him. Later, his wife told me privately that her husband was, in fact, extremely upset that the kids were just barely getting by in their meaningless jobs that were going nowhere. His words said one thing, but his face said quite another. Keep in mind that people often work at hiding their emotions, making them more difficult to detect if we are not conscientious observers. In addition, facial cues may be so fleeting, microgestures, that they are difficult to pick up. In a casual conversation, these subtle behaviors may not be of much significance, but in an important interpersonal interaction between lovers, parents, and children, business associates, or at an employment interview, such seemingly minor displays of tension may reflect deep emotional conflict. Since our conscious brains may try to mask our limbic emotions, any signals that reach the surface are critical to detect, as they may yield a more accurate picture of a person's deep-rooted thoughts and intentions. Although many joyous facial expressions are easily and universally recognized, these nonverbal tells may also be suppressed or concealed for a variety of reasons, making them more difficult to detect. For example, we certainly don't want to show elation when we are dealt a powerful hand of cards in a poker game. Or we may not want our colleagues to know we received a larger financial bonus than they did. We learn to try to conceal our happiness and excitement in circumstances where we deem it unwise to reveal our good fortune. Nevertheless, as with negative body cues, subtle or restrained positive nonverbals can be detected through careful observation and assessment of other subtle corroborative behaviors. For instance, our faces may leak a twinge of excitement that by itself might not be enough to convince an astute observer that we are truly happy. However, our feet might provide additional corroborative evidence of excitement, helping to validate the belief that the positive emotion is genuine. The face and feet show life is sweet. Not long ago, I was waiting for a flight out of Baltimore when the man next to me at the ticket counter received the good news that he was being upgraded to first class. As he sat down, he tried to suppress a smile, since to gloat over his good fortune would be seen as rude by other passengers waiting for an upgrade. Based on his facial expression alone, to declare he was happy would have been a marginal call. Then, however, I overheard him call his wife to tell her the good news, and although he spoke quietly, so those seated nearby couldn't hear the conversation, his feet were bouncing up and down like those of a young child waiting to open his birthday gifts. His happy feet provided collaborative evidence of his joyful state. Remember, look for clusters of behavior to solidify your observations. Genuine and unrestrained feelings of happiness are reflected in the face and neck. Positive emotions are revealed by the loosening of the furrowed lines on the forehead, relaxation of muscles around the mouth, emergence of full lips, they are not compressed or tight-lipped, and widening of the eye area as surrounding muscles relax. When we are truly relaxed and comfortable, facial muscles relax and the head will tilt to the side, exposing our most vulnerable area, the neck. This is shown in Figure 60 of the PDF. This is a high-comfort display, often seen during courtship, that is nearly impossible to mimic when we are uncomfortable, tense, suspicious, or threatened. What you won't see in an elevator. Try to tilt your head in an elevator full of strangers, and leave it that way for the complete duration of the ride. For most people, this is extremely difficult to accomplish, because head tilt is a behavior reserved for times when we are truly comfortable, and standing in an elevator surrounded by strangers is certainly not one of those times. Try tilting your head while looking directly at someone in the elevator. You will find that even more difficult, if not impossible. Interpreting nonverbal behaviors of the eyes. Our eyes have been called the windows of the soul. So it seems appropriate to examine these two portals for nonverbal messages of emotions or thoughts. Despite music lyrics such as "Your Lion Eyes," our eyes do express a lot of useful information. In fact, the eyes can be very accurate barometers of our feelings, because to some degree, we have very little control over them. Unlike other areas of the face that are far less reflexive in their movements, evolution has modified muscles in and around the eyes to protect them from hazards. For example, muscles inside the eyeball protect the delicate receptors from excessive light by constricting the pupil, and muscles around the eyes will close them immediately if a dangerous object comes near. These automatic responses help make the eyes a very honest part of our face. So let's examine some specific eye behaviors that can help us achieve insight into what people are thinking and how they intend to act. Pupillary constriction and squinting as a form of eye blocking. Research has shown that once we move beyond a startle response, when we like something we see, our pupils dilate. When we don't, they constrict. This is shown in the diagram in Figure 61. We have no conscious control over our pupils, and they respond to both external stimuli, for example, changes in light, and internal stimuli, such as thoughts, in fractions of a second. Because the pupils are small and difficult to see, particularly in dark eyes, and since changes in their size occur rapidly, pupil reactions are difficult to observe. Although these eye behaviors are very useful, people often don't look for them, ignore them, or, when they see them, undervalue their utility in assessing a person's likes and dislikes. When we become aroused, are surprised, or are suddenly confronted, our eyes open up. Not only do they widen, but the pupils also quickly dilate to let in the maximum amount of available light, thus sending the maximum amount of visual information to the brain. Obviously, this startle response has served us well over millennia. However, once we have a moment to process the information, and if it is perceived negatively, it is an unpleasant surprise or an actual threat, in a fraction of a second, the pupils will constrict. If they constrict, you can convict. In 1989, while working with the FBI on a matter involving national security, we repeatedly interviewed a spy who, while being cooperative, was nevertheless reluctant to name his co-conspirators involved in espionage. Attempts to appeal to his sense of patriotism and his concern for the millions of people he was placing in harm's way got us nowhere. Things were at an impasse. It was essential that this man's other associates be identified. They were still at large and presented a serious threat to the United States. Left with no alternatives, Mark Reeser, a friend and brilliant intelligence analyst with the FBI, suggested using nonverbals in an attempt to glean the information we needed. We presented this spy with 32 3x5-inch cards prepared by Mr. Reeser, each with the name of someone with whom the felon had worked, and who potentially could have assisted him. As he looked at each card, the man was asked to tell, in general terms, what he knew about each individual. We weren't specifically interested in the man's answers, since clearly words can be dishonest. Rather, we were watching his face. When he saw two names in particular, his eyes first widened in recognition, and then his pupils quickly constricted, and he squinted slightly. Subconsciously, he clearly did not like seeing these two names, and somehow felt in danger. Perhaps those individuals had threatened him not to reveal their names. This pupillary constriction and slight squinting were the only clues we had as to the identity of his co-conspirators. He was not aware of his nonverbal signals, and we did not comment on them. However, had we not looked for this eye behavior, we never would have identified those two individuals. The two accomplices were eventually located and interviewed, at which time they confessed their involvement in the crime. To this day, the subject of that interview does not know how we were able to identify his fellow culprits. By constricting the pupils, everything in front of us thus becomes precisely focused, so that we can see clearly and accurately in order to defend ourselves or effectively escape. This is very similar to how a camera aperture opening works. The smaller the aperture, the greater the depth of field, and the clearer the focus on everything near and far. Incidentally, if you ever need an emergency pair of reading glasses, and none are available, just make a small pinhole in a piece of paper and hold it up to your eye. The small aperture will bring what you are reading into focus. If maximal pupil constriction isn't sufficient, then we squint to make the aperture as small as possible while simultaneously protecting the eye. This is demonstrated in Figure 62. While walking with my daughter a few years back, we passed someone she recognized. She squinted slightly as she gave the girl a low wave. I suspected something negative had transpired between them, so I asked my daughter how she knew the girl. She replied that the girl had been a high school classmate with whom she had previously had words. The low hand wave was done out of social convention. However, the eye squint was an honest and betraying display of negative emotions and dislike, 7 years in the making. My daughter was unaware that her squinting behavior had given away her true feelings about the girl. Yet the information stood out like a beacon to me. Look at Figure 63 of the PDF for an example. The same phenomenon is seen in the business world. When customers or clients suddenly squint while reading a contract, they are likely struggling with something in the wording of the text, the discomfort or doubt registering immediately in their eyes. Most likely, these business associates will be totally unaware they are transmitting this very clear message of disagreement or dislike. In addition to squinting when ill at ease, some individuals will lower their eyebrows after observing something unsettling in their environment. Arched eyebrows signify high confidence and positive feelings, a gravity-defying behavior, whereas lowered eyebrows are usually a sign of low confidence and negative feelings, a behavior that indicates weakness and insecurity in a person. The eyebrow squint. How low do you go? Eyebrow squints can have several different meanings. In order to differentiate among these, you need to assess the degree of the eyebrow movement and the context in which it takes place. For instance, we sometimes lower our eyebrows and squint when being aggressive or confrontational. Likewise, we lower the eyebrows in the face of real or imagined danger or threats. We also do this when we are annoyed, feel displeasure, or are angry. If, however, we drop the eyebrows too low, as may be seen in a very defeated child, it is a universal sign of weakness and insecurity. It is a behavior of obsequiousness, fawning, or submissiveness, consistent with kowtowing or cowering, and may be capitalized upon by social predators, such as psychopaths. In studies, prisoners have reported that when new inmates arrive at jail, they look for this troubled, lowered eyebrow behavior in the newcomers to reveal which ones are weak and insecure. In your social and business interactions, you can watch for these eyebrow movements to probe for weakness or strength in others. Eye blocking, or how the brain spares itself. Our eyes, more remarkable than any camera, have evolved as the primary means by which humans receive information. In fact, we often attempt to censor incoming data through a limbic survival mechanism known as eye blocking, which evolved to protect the brain from seeing undesirable images. Any decrease in the size of the eyes, whether through squinting or pupillary constriction, is a form of subconscious blocking behavior. And all blocking behaviors are indicative of concern, dislike, disagreement, or the perception of a potential threat. The many forms of eye blocking are such a common and natural part of our nonverbal repertoire that most people either miss them completely or ignore their meaning. Look at figures 64 through 67 for some examples. For example, think about a time when someone told you bad news. Perhaps you didn't notice, but most likely, as you heard the information, your eyelids closed for a few moments. This type of blocking behavior is very ancient in origin and hardwired in our brains. Even babies innately eye-block within the womb when confronted with loud sounds. Even more amazing is the fact that children who are born blind will cover their eyes when they hear bad news. Throughout our lives, we employ this limbic-driven eye-blocking behavior when we hear something terrible, despite the fact that it neither blocks our hearing nor the thoughts that follow. Perhaps it simply serves to give the brain a temporary respite, or to communicate our deepest sentiments. But regardless of the reason, the brain still compels us to perform this behavior. Eye blocking takes many forms and can be observed at any tragic event, whether bad news is being broadcast or as tragedy is about to befall us. People may cup a hand completely over both eyes, put one open hand over each eye, or block the entire face with an object, such as a newspaper or book. Even internal information in the form of a thought can compel this response. A person who suddenly remembers he forgot something important may momentarily close his eyes and take a deep breath as he ponders his blunder. When interpreted in context, eye-blocking behaviors can be powerful indicators of a person's thoughts and feelings. These distancing clues occur in real time as soon as something negative is heard. During conversation, this is one of the best signals to let us know that something spoken did not sit well with the person hearing the information. I have repeatedly used eye-blocking behavior as a tell in my work with the FBI. The ice pick murder and the hotel fire in Puerto Rico, discussed earlier in this book, are only two of the many, many times I witnessed the significance of this eye behavior. I still watch for eye-blocking behavior on a daily basis to assess the feelings and thoughts of others. While eye-blocking behaviors are usually associated with seeing or hearing something negative that causes us discomfort, they can also be an indication of low confidence. As with most other tells, the eye-blocking response is most reliable and valuable when it happens immediately after a significant event that you can identify. If an eye block occurs right after you tell a person a specific piece of information, or upon making some type of an offer, it should tell you that something is amiss and the individual is troubled. At this point, you might want to rethink how you wish to proceed if your goal is to enhance your chances of interpersonal success with this person. Pupillary dilation, eyebrow arching, and flashbulb eyes. There are plenty of eye behaviors that show positive feelings. At a very young age, our eyes register comfort when we see our mothers. A baby will follow his mother's face within 72 hours of birth, and his eyes will widen when she enters the room, demonstrating interest and contentment. The loving mother will likewise exhibit a relaxed opening of her eyes, and the baby will gaze into them and take comfort from her. Widened eyes are a positive sign. They indicate that someone is observing something that makes her feel good. Contrary to pupil constriction, contentment and positive emotions are indicated by pupil dilation. The brain is essentially saying, "I like what I see. Let me see it better." When people are truly pleased by what they see, not only do their pupils dilate, but their eyebrows rise, arch, widening their eye area, and making their eyes look larger. In addition, some people dramatically expand the aperture of their eyes by opening their eyes as big and wide as possible, creating an appearance known as flashbulb eyes. This is the wide-eyed look normally associated with surprise or positive events. This is also another form of the gravity-defying behaviors usually associated with good feelings. For examples of these behaviors, Look at figures 68, 69, and 70 on the PDF. When the flashbulb goes off. When we see someone we like, or are surprised by running into a person we haven't seen in a while, we tend to expand our eyes to make them as big as possible, concurrent with pupillary dilation. In a work environment, you can assume the boss really likes you, or that you did something really well if his or her eyes open very wide when looking at you. You can use this affirming behavior to determine if you are on the right track, whether courting, doing business, or just trying to make friends. For example, picture the exaggerated dreamy eyes of a young girl in love as she stares at her date with adoration. In short, watch the eyes. The bigger they get, the better things are. On the other hand, when you start to see eye shrinkage, such as squinting, eyebrows dropping, or pupils constricting, you may want to rethink and change your behavioral tactics. I will express a note of caution. Pupil dilation and constriction can be caused by factors unrelated to emotions or events, such as variation in lighting, some medical conditions, and certain drugs. Be careful to consider these factors, or you could be misled. Eye flash. A variant on the flashbulb eyes is the eyebrow raise or eye flash that takes place very quickly, staccato-like, during a positive emotional event. Not only is this behavior universally recognized as indicative of a pleasant surprise, think of someone arriving at a surprise party, but it is also used for emphasis and to show intensity. It is very common to see people saying, "Wow," as they raise their eyebrows and flash their eyes. This is a very genuine positive display. When someone is excitedly emphasizing a point or telling a story, the brow raise should occur. It reflects the true mood of the individual, and it also clears the way for greater visual clarity. Perhaps the best utility of the brow raise is to note when someone stops doing it while telling a story. Often, when we are not emotionally attached to something being said, there will be no eye emphasis. Such an observed lack of attachment may simply reflect decreased interest, or may occur because what is being said is not the truth. Distinguishing between these causes is difficult. Essentially, all you can do is look for a decrease in brow raises, or their sudden absence, to alert you that something has changed. It is remarkable how often people will change their facial emphasis, their eyebrow flashes, as they become less and less committed to what they are saying or doing. Eye gaze behavior. It is universal that when we look directly at others, we either like them, are curious about them, or want to threaten them. Lovers stare into each other's eyes with great frequency, as do mother and child. But so do predators, who use a direct gaze to either mesmerize or threaten. Think of stares of Ted Bundy and Charles Manson. In other words, the brain employs a single-eye behavior, a strong gaze, to communicate love, interest, or hate. Therefore, we must rely on other facial displays that accompany eye gaze behavior to determine liking, a relaxed smile, or dislike, tightened jaws, compressed lips. Conversely, when we gaze away during a conversation, we tend to do so to engage a thought more clearly without the distraction of looking at the person with whom we are talking. This behavior is often mistaken as rudeness or as personal rejection, which it is not. Nor is it a sign of deception or disinterest. In fact, it is actually a comfort display. When talking to friends, we routinely look in the distance as we converse. We do this because we feel comfortable enough to do so. The limbic brain detects no threats from this person. Do not assume someone is being deceptive, disinterested, or displeased just because he or she looks away. Clarity of thought is often enhanced by looking away, and that is the reason we do it. There are many other reasons for looking away from a speaker. A downward gaze may demonstrate that we are processing a sentiment or a feeling, conducting an internal dialogue, or perhaps demonstrating submissiveness. In many cultures, a downward gaze, or other form of eye aversion, is expected in the face of authority, or in the presence of a high-status individual. Often children are taught to look down humbly when being chastised by a parent or adult. In embarrassing situations, onlookers may avert their eyes out of courtesy. Never assume that a downward gaze is a sign of deception. In all cultures in which it has been studied, science validates that those who are dominant have more freedom in using eye gaze behavior. In essence, these individuals are entitled to look wherever they want. Subordinates, however, are more restricted in where they can look and when. Humility dictates that in the presence of royalty, as in church, heads are bowed. As a general rule, dominants tend to ignore subordinates visually, while subordinates tend to gaze at dominant individuals at a distance. In other words, higher status individuals can be indifferent, while lower status persons are required to be attentive with their gaze. The king is free to look at anyone he wants, but all subjects face the king, even as they back out of a room. Many employers have told me that they dislike it during an interview when applicants' eyes are wandering all over the room, as though they own the place. Because roving eyes make a person look disinterested or superior, doing so always leaves a bad impression. Even if you are attempting to ascertain whether or not you would like to work there, you will likely never get the chance if your eyes do not focus on the person speaking during a job interview. Eye blink, eye flutter behavior. Our blink rate increases when we are aroused, troubled, nervous, or concerned, and it returns to normal when we are relaxed. A series of rapid eye blinks may reflect an inner struggle. For instance, if someone says something we don't like, we may actually flutter our eyelids. Similarly, we might also do so if we are having trouble expressing ourselves in a conversation. Eyelid flutter is very much indicative of a struggle either with our performance or with the delivery or acceptance of information. Perhaps more than any other actor, British actor Hugh Grant uses eyelid flutter to communicate that he is befuddled, nonplussed, struggling, or otherwise in trouble. Flutter focus. Observing for eyelid flutter can help you read people and adjust your behavior accordingly. For instance, in a social gathering or business meeting, the socially adept will look for this behavior to assess participants' comfort. Something is troubling the individual whose eyelids are quivering. This nonverbal is very accurate, and in some people, it will start precisely at the moment an issue arises. For instance, in conversation, an onset of eyelid flutter indicates the subject has become controversial or unacceptable, and a change of topic is probably in order. The sudden appearance of this nonverbal signal is important and should not be ignored if you want your guests to be comfortable. Since people vary in their blink rate or eyelid fluttering, particularly if they are adjusting to new contact lenses, you should look for changes in flutter rate, such as a sudden absence or increase in flutter, to gain insight into a person's thoughts and feelings. Students of nonverbal communication often note how President Richard Nixon's blink rate increased when he made his "I am not a crook" speech. The fact is, eye blink frequency will likely increase in anyone under stress, whether he is lying or not. I reviewed President Bill Clinton's eye blink rate during his deposition, and it increased fivefold as a result of the stress he was under. Though it's tempting to do so, I would be very reluctant to label anyone a liar just because their blink rate increases, since any stress, including being asked questions in public, can cause the blink rate to increase. Looking askance. Looking askance at others is a behavior that is performed with the head and eyes, as shown in Figure 71 of the PDF. It can take the form of a sideways or tilted head motion, accompanied by a side glance or a brief roll of the eyes. Looking askance is a display that is seen when we are suspicious of others or question the validity of what they are saying. Sometimes this body signal is very quick. At other times, it may be almost sarcastically exaggerated and last throughout an encounter. While more curious or wary than clearly disrespectful, this nonverbal is fairly easy to spot, and its message is, I am listening to you, but I am not buying what you're saying. At least, not yet. Understanding nonverbal behaviors of the mouth. Like the eyes, the mouth provides a number of relatively reliable and noteworthy tells that can assist you in dealing more effectively with people. Like the eyes, the mouth can also be manipulated by the thinking brain to send out false signals. So caution must be exercised in interpretation. That said, here are some focal points of interest with regard to the body language of the mouth. A false smile and a real smile. It is well known by researchers that humans have both a fake and a real smile. The fake smile is used almost as a social obligation toward those who are not close to us, while the real smile is reserved for those people and events we truly care about. A real smile appears primarily because of the action of two muscles, the zygomaticus major, which stretches from the corner of the mouth to the cheekbone, and the orbicularis oculi, which surrounds the eye. When working together bilaterally, these draw the corners of the mouth up and crinkle the outer edges of the eyes, causing the crow's feet of a familiar warm and honest smile. This is demonstrated in Figure 72. When we exhibit a social or false smile, the lip corner stretches sideways through the use of a muscle called the risorius. When used bilaterally, these effectively pull the corners of the mouth sideways, but cannot lift them upward, as is the case with a true smile. An example of a false smile is pictured in Figure 73. Interestingly, babies several weeks old will already reserve the full zygomatic smile for their mothers and utilize the risorius smile for all others. If you are unhappy, it is unlikely that you will be able to smile fully using both the zygomaticus majoris and the orbicularis oculi muscles. Real smiles are difficult to fake when we have a sincere lack of emotion. The smile barometer. With practice, it won't take you long to distinguish between a fake smile and the real thing. One easy way to speed the learning process is to watch how people you know greet others based on how they feel about them. For example, if you know your business partner feels good about individual A and dislikes individual B, and both have been invited to an office party he is hosting, watch his face as he meets each person at the door. You'll be able to distinguish the two types of smiles in no time at all. Once you can distinguish between a false and real smile, you can use it as a barometer of how people really feel about you, and you can respond accordingly. You can also look for the different types of smiles to gauge how your ideas or suggestions are coming across to the listener. Ideas that are greeted with genuine smiles should be explored further and put on the fast-track to-do list. Suggestions that are met with the fake smile should be reevaluated or put on the back burner. This smile barometer works with friends, spouses, coworkers, children, and even your boss. It provides information about people's feelings in all types and phases of interpersonal interaction. Disappearing lips, lip compression, and the upside-down U. If it seems like the lips have disappeared from every photograph you have seen recently of anyone testifying before Congress, it is because of stress. I say this with assurance, because when it comes to stress, like testifying before Congress, nothing is more universal than disappearing lips. When we are stressed, we tend to make our lips disappear subconsciously. When we press our lips together, it is as if the limbic brain is telling us to shut down and not allow anything into our bodies, because at this moment, we are consumed with serious issues. To see an example of this, look at Figure 74 of the PDF. Lip compression is very indicative of true negative sentiment that manifests quite vividly in real time. It is a clear sign that a person is troubled and that something is wrong. It rarely, if ever, has a positive connotation. This does not mean the person is being deceptive. It just means that they are stressed at the moment. In the series of photographs shown in figures 75 to 78 on the PDF that accompanies this audio program, I demonstrate how the lips progressively go from full, things are okay, to disappearing or compressed lips, things are not okay. Note especially, on the final photograph, figure 78, how the corner of the mouth turns down, making the mouth look like an upside-down U. This behavior is indicative of high distress, discomfort. This is a formidable cue, or signal, that the person is experiencing an extreme amount of stress. In my classes, you might want to try this with friends. I tell students to make their lips disappear or compress them and to look around at each other. What they soon realize when I point it out to them is that they can make their lips disappear, but usually it is in a straight line. Most people who try this cannot force the corners of the mouth down into an upside-down U shape. Why? Because this is a limbic response that is hard to mimic, unless we are really distressed or grieving. Do keep in mind that for some people, the turned down corners of the mouth is a normal behavior, and as such is not an accurate sign of distress. However, for the large majority of us, this is a very accurate tell of negative thoughts or sentiments. When disappearing lips aren't the only things being hidden. I look for lip compression or disappearing lips during interviews or when someone is making a declarative statement. This is such a reliable cue that it will show up precisely at the moment a difficult question is asked. If you see it, that doesn't necessarily mean the person is lying. Instead, it indicates that a very specific question served as a negative stimulus and really bothered the person. For example, if I ask someone, "Are you hiding something from me?" and he compresses his lips as I ask the question, he is hiding something. This is especially accurate if it is the only time he has concealed or compressed his lips during our discussion. It is a signal that I need to push further in questioning this person. The lip purse. Be sure to look for individuals who purse their lips while you or someone else is talking, as demonstrated in Figure 79 of the PDF. This behavior usually means they disagree with what is being said, or they are considering an alternative thought or idea. Knowing this information can be very valuable in helping you determine how to present your case, modify your offer, or guide the conversation. To ascertain whether the lip purse means disagreement, or rather that the person is considering an alternative point of view, you should monitor the ongoing conversation long enough to gather additional clues. Lip pursing is often seen during closing arguments at a trial. While one attorney speaks, the opposing counsel will purse his or her lips in disagreement. Judges also do it, as they disagree with attorneys during sidebar conferences. While reviewing contracts, watching for, and spotting lip-pursing behaviors can help attorneys decipher the concerns or issues of opposing counsel. Lip-pursing can be seen during police interviews, especially when confronting a suspect with the wrong information. The suspect will purse his lips in disagreement because he knows the investigator has the facts wrong. In business settings, lip-pursing occurs all the time and should be considered an effective means of gathering information about a situation. For example, as a paragraph is being read from a contract, those opposed to a particular item or sentence will purse their lips at the very moment the words are uttered. Or as individuals are being mentioned for promotion, you will see lip pursing as the name of someone less desirable is being mentioned. Lip pursing is so accurate that it really should be given greater attention. It shows up in numerous settings and circumstances, and is a very reliable indicator that a person is thinking alternatively, or is completely rejecting what is being said. The sneer. The sneer, like the rolling of the eyes, is a universal act of contempt. It is disrespectful and reflects a lack of caring or empathy on the part of the person doing the sneering. When we sneer, the buccinator muscles on the sides of our face contract to draw the lip corners sideward toward the ears and produce a sneering dimple in the cheeks. This expression is very visible and meaningful, even if it is flashed for just a moment, as shown in Figure 80. A sneer can be very illuminating with regard to what is going on in a person's mind and what they may portend. Nothing to sneer at. At the University of Washington, researcher John Gottman discovered during therapy with married couples that if one or both partners sneered, this was a significant and potent signal for predicting the likelihood of a breakup. Once disregard or contempt has entered the psyche, as indicated by a sneer, the relationship is troubled or even terminal. I have noted during FBI investigations that suspects will sneer during interviews when they think they know more than the interviewer or sense that the officer does not know the full picture. In either circumstance, a sneer is a distinct sign of disrespect or contempt for another person. Tongue displays. There are numerous tongue signals that can provide us with valuable insights into a person's thoughts or moods. When we are stressed, causing our mouth to be dry, it is normal to lick our lips to moisten them. Also, during times of discomfort, we tend to rub our tongues back and forth across our lips to pacify and calm ourselves. We may stick out the tongue, usually to the side, as we focus assiduously on a task. For example, when basketball great Michael Jordan goes up for a dunk. Or we may poke out our tongue to antagonize someone we dislike, or to show disgust. Children do this all the time. When an individual displays other mouth cues associated with stress, such as lip biting, mouth touching, lip licking, or object biting, it further bolsters a careful observer's belief that the person is insecure. See Figure 81 for a depiction of lip licking, a pacifying behavior. Additionally, if people touch and/or lick their lips while pondering their options, particularly when they take an unusual amount of time, these are signs of insecurity. Tongue jutting behavior is a gesture used by people who think they have gotten away with something or are caught doing something. I have seen this behavior in flea markets both here and in Russia, among street vendors in Lower Manhattan, at poker tables in Las Vegas, during interviews at the FBI, and in business meetings. In each case, the person made the gesture, tongue between the teeth without touching the lips, at the conclusion of some sort of a deal, or as a final nonverbal statement. This is demonstrated in Figure 82 of the PDF. This, in its own way, is a transactional behavior. It seems to present subconsciously at the end of social interactions, and has a variety of meanings that must be taken in context. Its several meanings include, I got caught, gleeful excitement, I got away with something, I did something foolish, or I am naughty. Just today, as I was going over some notes for this book, the attendant at the university cafeteria placed the wrong vegetables on the plate of the student directly in front of me. When the student spoke up to correct the error, the attendant jutted her tongue out between her teeth and raised her shoulders as if to say, oops, I made a mistake. In social or business discussions, this tongue-jut behavior is usually seen toward the end of the dialogue, when one person feels he has gotten away with something and the other party has failed to detect or pursue the matter. If you see tongue-jutting behavior, ask yourself what just transpired. Consider whether you may have been fooled or cheated, or that you or someone else just made a mistake. This is the time to assess whether someone is putting one over on you.